The jivas are vibhinamsha expansions. The different incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are swamsha expansions. Thus, there are different potencies of the Supreme Lord, and there are different expansions of the different potencies. In this way, for different reasons, there are different expansions of the same one principle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This understanding is real knowledge, but when the living entity is covered by the upadhi or designated body, he sees differences, exactly as one sees differences in reflections of oneself on water, on oil, or in a mirror. When something is reflected on the water, it appears to be moving. When it is reflected on ice, it appears fixed. When it is reflected on oil, it appears hazy. The subject is one, but under different conditions, it appears differently. When the qualifying factor is taken away, the whole appears to be one. In other words, when one comes to the Paramahamsa or perfectional stage of life by practicing Bhakti Yoga, he sees only Krishna everywhere. For him, there is no other objective. In conclusion, due to different causes, the living entity is visible in different forms as an animal, human being, demigod, trees, etc. Actually, every living entity is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 5.18, therefore, It is explained that one who actually sees the spirit soul does not distinguish between a learned Brahmana and a dog, an elephant or a cow. Pandita Samadarshana. One who is actually learned sees only the living entity, not the outward covering. Differentiation is therefore the result of different karma, of fruitive activities. And when we stop fruitive activities, turning them into acts of devotion, we can understand that we are not different from anyone else, regardless of the form. This is only possible in Krishna consciousness. In this moment, there are many different races of men from all parts of the world participating. But because they think of themselves as servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not differentiate between black and white, yellow and red. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore the only means to make the living entities free of all designations. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manogrishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamiyam Dadati Swapadatikam Mukham Karoti Vacharam Pangum Langaya Devirim Yat Tripatam Mande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Chayuta Karupyascha Kripasindhu Vyayvacha Atikanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara
Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
Rama Rama Hare Hare. So we see here that we are continuing the conversation between the Kumaras and Ritu Maharaj. In the previous chapter, we saw that Ritu Maharaj had concluded doing lots of sacrifices, and Ritu Maharaj was a Rajrishi. So he used to do these sacrifices for the betterment of the citizens of this entire planet that he was ruling. And after concluding the sacrifices, he goes back to his kingdom. We see how the citizens welcome him with great pomp. Like, the citizens are so happy to have their king back. So the whole reception of Ritu Maharaj is described. And then Ritu Maharaj starts addressing all the citizens of his kingdom. And he is giving lots of instructions to them about what is the goal of life, how to go back to Godhead, different between the goal of Varnashram Dharma. So Ritu Maharaj is stopping all this. And while he is having this enlightening conversation with his citizens, suddenly the four Kumaras appear over there. So we see in the previous ages when, you know, these personalities were highly qualified and dedicated to the cause of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord himself had appeared also in Ritu Maharaj's sacrifice, and now the four Kumaras had appeared. We see similarly even in Yudhishthir Maharaj, we were just studying that chapter in our Bhaktivedanta course with Keshav Prabhu. Like, he just did the Rajasuya sacrifice. And when Yudhishthir Maharaj did the Rajasuya sacrifice, his purpose was to enlighten everybody in the universe that it's Krishna who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone should surrender to him. And what is the mahima, or what is the glorification of the devotees who surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even in the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yudhishthir Maharaj, when he did, because he was a pure devotee, great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Gandharvas, even people like the snakes, elevated snakes from the snakes planet, all these people had appeared in his sacrifice. So we see, because all these personalities are highly elevated, these different personalities come to visit them. They are able to attract this good association towards them. In fact, once when Srila Prabhupada was lecturing in a hall, the devotees had arranged in the early days of ISKCON. They had arranged a hall program for Srila Prabhupada. And unfortunately, in that program, because the movement was just starting, there was not a big turnout that had happened. Not many people had come. And later on, the devotees were feeling a bit repentant. Obviously, like, if we've invited, let's say, a great personality like Devamrita or just some other person to give a lecture, and not many people come for the lecture, even though we've tried hard. We would feel sorry that, you know, Devamrita Maharaj has come to give this class, but nobody was there to receive his mercy. So in the same way, Prabhupada's disciples are feeling a bit sorry, and they went and told Prabhupada that we had sent out flyers, we had advertised, but, you know, unfortunately not many people came, so we are feeling sorry about that, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said that, no, there were lots of people, didn't you see? There were the great demigods, there was Narad Muni sitting in the corner and listening to the lecture that I was giving. So, just as Prithu Maharaj and Yudhishthir Maharaj are able to attract personalities because of your purity, in the same way, even Prabhupada was able to attract these personalities when he was doing Sankirtan or he was glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is what we learn from this pastime. So now the Kumaras, after Prithu Maharaj nicely receives the Kumaras, the Vedic etiquette of how to receive a guest is described in this chapter. He starts asking the same questions which he himself was first instructing his citizens. So like we heard in yesterday's class also, Srimad Bhagavatam class, we, as devotees, we have to play the role of giving advice and receiving advice. So if we are not keeping ourselves in a position where we are also receiving instructions from senior devotees or from our peers, then we are actually in a dangerous position. Because we might give, but we are not taking or receiving. And, you know, that can then lead to pride, and it will obviously lead to emptiness also in some time, because what will you give if you haven't received from senior personalities? So Prithu Maharaj is demonstrating again that example as well. He has just, you know, given these instructions to his citizens about the goal of life and all, but now he's receiving similar instructions from the Kumaras. He's asking those questions to the Kumaras. And Sanat Kumar, who's the leader of all the four Kumaras, he first glorifies Prithu Maharaj for asking these beautiful questions. He says that the questions you have asked are beneficial for the entire mankind because your intent is to make everyone Krishna conscious. And we see similar glorification, very similar verse, when Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami are conversing. Sukadeva Goswami is congratulating Parikshit Maharaj for asking pertinent questions in Canto 1. Similarly, we see here Prithu Maharaj being glorified by Sanat Kumar for asking these very relevant questions which are for the benefit of mankind. And Sanat Kumar has now started speaking. He has given lots of instructions in the previous verses. And as in yesterday's verse, in today's verse also, Prabhupada, Sanat Kumar and Prabhupada in his purport is explaining the futility of material designations in this world. So, further down in the lecture, we will also be talking about some personalities whose disappearance and appearance stages. And we see even during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, that casteism or, you know, that upadhi thing was there. So Varnashram Dharma is established by Krishna so that people can make gradual progression towards the Lord. But we see that the Varnashram Dharma sometimes takes the name of casteism, and then again those upadhis are there in people's mind. Oh, I'm a Brahmana, we cannot marry into a lower caste. In India, still it is there. When people are looking for marriages, especially arranged marriages, which is still a little bit prevalent in India, when the parents look for a match for their son or daughter, that is one of the very important criteria. That is the person from the same caste. So, I'm a Brahmana, I'm a Vaishya, I'm a Shudra, we belong to this community, that community, and they look for people within that same community. And sometimes that takes precedence over other qualities that the boy or the girl might have. But we know Chanakya Pandit says that if you get a qualified wife, even if she is from a very poor and destitute family, you should accept that wife, looking at the qualities of the wife. So even Chanakya Pandit says that, but in the name of these upadhis and casteism, people don't follow those instructions. So, and even in the material, not only Varnashram Dharma, even in a material life, we see that. Like, you know, people are, especially working people, are very crazy about promotions, about what, you know, designation I have in my office. And the parents of such people are also like to show up, oh, my son, he's, you know, so and so in this company. So even parents take pride. So this whole culture is there of what designation I have in my office, what designation I have in my community, whether I'm the leader or something, and then others taking pride. So this thing, you know, this upadhis breed a whole culture of pride, showing off and all these things. And we see that as being completely negated by Sanat Kumar in these verses. In the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that if people have these false upadhis, it does not allow them to realize that they are actually Vibhinamsha. They are actually the separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are still parts of the Lord. And the goal of the path is to get united with the One. Otherwise, that part doesn't have any meaning. Yesterday, we had in our house, our table had broken off, our center table, and we were trying to fix it. But one or two parts, because yeah, it had broken off since a long time, and the parts had rolled under the sofa, the whatever, cabinets and all. We were trying to locate the parts. But we couldn't find one or two parts, and we had to assemble without them only. But we now see that even if we get that part later on, if we are not uniting it with the whole, that part is going to be useless. That's the whole, you know, you use of that part unless it unites with the whole. And that is what Prabhupada is trying to stress in this purport, that unless people realize that they are the, you know, parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will not be able to function properly in this material world. And Prabhupada then goes on to glorify Pandita Samadarshina. He says that once one realizes that the soul is beyond all these so-called designations which it has acquired for itself, a tree, a demigod, Gandharva, or a human being, whatever, and even in the human species we try to acquire so many designations, mother, father, grandmother, manager, all these designations we try to acquire. So Prabhupada is explaining the purport that once one goes beyond all these things and is able to recognize the soul as just being the part of the Supreme Lord and nothing else, and we see in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna talking about Pandita Samadarshana, only then he will be able to start elevating himself and going towards, you know, back to Godhead, and will be able to see Krishna everywhere. So this Saturday in our children's class we celebrated Narasimha Chaturdashi. And we, you know, we were explaining the story of Prahlad. So we were telling the children that Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj that, is Narasimha Dev there in this pillar? Is your Lord there in this pillar? And Prahlad Maharaj said, yes, he is everywhere. Now it is said that there were so many people present over there, and even the demigods were watching from the top. But were they able to see the Lord in the pillar? No. It was only Prahlad Maharaj who was able to see the Lord everywhere and within the pillar as well. And that's because he was a pure devotee. His eyes were anointed with love of Krishna, and that is why he was able to see Narasimha Dev. And that love actually made Narasimha Dev, it forced the Lord to appear from the pillar, because Prahlad Maharaj boldly declared to Hiranyakashipu that yes, he is there in the pillar. And you know, I was listening to a lecture on this topic, and the speaker was saying that it forced the Lord to then appear from the pillar, because Prahlad Maharaj, his devotee, had boldly claimed that he is there in the pillar. So then Narasimha Dev broke out from the pillar and he appeared. So that is, you know, the gist of what Prabhupada is trying to explain, that if we become pure devotees, we will become Pandita Samadarshina. We will not only be able to see the soul as it is, without its covering, its designations, but we will also be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, just as Prahlad Maharaj was able to see. So today it is the appearance and disappearance day of some such elevated personalities who were also Samadarshina and who were able to see the Lord everywhere, because of their pure eyes. So it is the disappearance day of Madhu Pandit Goswami, who was an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is the appearance day of Janava Mata, who was the eternal consort of Nityananda Prabhu, and also Sita Mata, the eternal consort of Lord Ramchandra. So we will spend the next few minutes glorifying these personalities, because on their appearance and disappearance days, it is mentioned by our acharyas that these personalities are in a very merciful mood, and they give lots of blessings if we sit and hear or speak about them. So we'll start with Madhu Pandit. So Madhu Pandit was a close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in Krishna Leela, Madhu Pandit is at, his eternal position is Mandali Sakhi. And he is from the group of Champaklata Gopi. So this group of Champaklata Gopi, which is headed by Madhu Pandit, who is Mandali Sakhi, that group is expert in cooking. So Champaklata Gopi, also her eternal service to the Lord, to the Divine Kapil, is, you know, cooking and serving different dishes. And in the same way, her group was also expert in cooking. And Mandali Sakhi was part, who is Madhu Pandit, was part of this group. So Madhu Pandit was a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. And he had a god brother named as Paramananda Bhattacharya. So when Vajranath, who is the great grandson of Krishna, was present on this earth, after Krishna had left the planet, Vajranath had taken that beauty upon himself to establish deities of Lord Krishna, which represented Krishna's form as it is, because he had seen Lord Krishna. So he was instructed that, can you make, you know, deities of Lord Krishna which are like Krishna and establish temples? And that is what Vajranath had done. So he had established the beautiful Gopinath deity of Lord Krishna, which was exactly looked like Lord Krishna. And once he had established that deity, it was worshipped for many thousands of years, But then that deity had become unmanifest from the eyes of people. So, Madhu Pandit and Paramananda Bhattacharya, the two god brothers, disciples of Gadadhar Pandit, they used to travel together to Vrindavan. And they used to do parikrama of Rajabhumi. And they were always looking for Krishna. And they knew from the scriptures, they had heard that Vajranam had established this deity of Gopinath. But it had disappeared suddenly. So they were always looking and searching for Gopinath everywhere in Vrajamandal. And suddenly one day, when they were sitting on the banks of Yamuna at Vamsivad, Gopinath manifested himself to Paramananda Bhattacharya. So it was Paramananda Bhattacharya who rediscovered this deity of Gopinath from Vamsivad on the banks of Yamuna. And then he handed over this deity to Madhu Pandit to worship. So if we, you know, there is, you know, this famous Vaishnava song where all the deities' names are there and who established which deity. So when we say Gopinath, we talk about Gopinath deity, this is Madhu Pandit Pranadhanare. So he was the one who had actually done the worship of Gopinath deity. So he brought Gopinath deity to Gopinath Bazar to establish a temple over there. And already Radha Raman temple was already over there. So Radha Ramanji was already being worshipped in Gopinath Bazar. And Madhu Pandit brought the Gopinath deity and made a beautiful temple in Gopinath Bazar over there. And even today, if we visit Vrindavan, we can see this temple in Gopinath Bazar. And Madhu Pandit's original samadhi is there. As soon as we enter the temple to the right, his samadhi is there in the Gopinath temple which he himself worshipped and established. So after the six Goswamis, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu had disappeared, and all the six Goswamis of Vrindavan had also disappeared, the next generation of devotees had taken the mission of spreading Sankirtan on themselves. And that next generation of devotees was Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamanand Pandit. So these three had taken that responsibility upon themselves. So they had collected all the Vaishnavas, all the Goswamis' writings and scriptures. And they wanted to take them from Vrindavan to Navadvip so that they can also distribute it to those literatures to the devotees, to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who were living in Navadvip. So when they were about to depart, they had kept all these scriptures in bullock carts. And when these three were about to depart, it is mentioned that Madhu Pandit came there and he offered them the Mahagarland of Gopinath. So in this way, he was actually bringing blessings of Gopinath to these three people so that they become successful in their mission. So that is also mentioned. And there is a beautiful pastime which I read in Indradyumna Maharaj's diary of a traveling preacher. And Indradyumna Maharaj talks about his experience and his realization about Madhu Pandit. So Indradyumna Maharaj, now Gopinath, when the Mughal emperors, you know, the Mughals were attacking Vrindavan, many of the original deities had to be shifted from Vrindavan to Jaipur. And the king who was present at that time in Jaipur, he was a Rajput and he was a Kshatriya king. So he said that it's my responsibility to protect these deities. And he actually allowed temples of these different original deities to be built over there. And he protected them from any further attacks. And he preserved these original deities for us. So Gopinath deity was also transferred to Jaipur to protect Gopinath deity being destroyed by the Mughals. So Indradyumna Maharaj had gone to Jaipur to take darshan of this original Gopinath deity. And it is mentioned that from 1739 to 1902, there was a beautiful coat which Madhu Pandit used to personally wear, and that coat was made of very beautifully carved tulsi beads. So the entire coat was made from tulsi beads, and it was a very, very beautiful coat. But from 1739 to 1902, it was kept in a trunk. It was never taken out. But in 1902, the Goswamis of the Jaipur temple, they took out that coat and they started displaying it in a glass cabinet, so that everyone could come and take darshan of the court and obviously, you know, remember the pastimes of Madhu Pandit and getting that boon. So when Indradyumna Maharaj went to this Jaipur temple, he also wanted to see this court. And the Goswami of the Jaipur temple at that time opened the key. And, you know, fortunately the key worked even after so many years to the glass cabinet. So he opened the glass cabinet and he allowed Indradyumna Maharaj to take darshan of this court. And Indradyumna Maharaj saw, obviously, it was made of tulsi beads. So he saw lots of tulsi beads had fallen down. So he took a few and put them in his pocket, just as Mahaprasad of Madhu Pandit. And then the Goswami was, and Indradyumna Maharaj was fervently praying also to this court. Because obviously it was tadiya, like, you know, the paraphernalia which devotees use are non-different from the devotees themselves. So he was praying to that court. And same way as we see how, you know, our temple has also so nicely preserved Prabhupada's original paraphernalia, you know, the tilak that Prabhupada used, socks that he used, his cane, everything is so nicely preserved in Prabhupada's room. So in the same way, Pradyumna Maharaj also was praying fervently to this code. And when the Goswami saw that, he was very pleased to see Indradyumna Maharaj doing this. And he asked him, where are you from? Which sampradaya are you from? And Indradyumna Maharaj very proudly declared to him that I am from the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, which was established by Prabhupada, and I am one of his disciples. And the Goswami became so happy to hear this. He had great regard for Srila Prabhupada, so he started glorifying Prabhupada in front of Indradyumna Maharaj. And he told him that your Guru Maharaj has taken so much efforts to spread this Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And I'm so pleased that you have come to take darshan of this code. So I want to give this code to you. So he was happy to give the entire court of Madhupandit to Indradyumna Maharaj. But then Indradyumna Maharaj is so humble and he knows the mood of Srila Prabhupada. So he then said that no, it's, you know, he thanked the Goswami for giving him that honor. But he said that no, this court actually belongs in this temple only. Because so many people will come to take darshan for thousands of years and they should all get benefit of taking darshan of Madhupandit's court. And he said that as Mahaprasad, I've already taken a few beads, so that is enough for me. But let this court stay here for future generations to get benefit from its darshan. And Indradyumna Maharaj further went on to tell the Goswami that I am so pleased by the way, you know, you are worshipping this court and you are looking after the devotees who come to visit and see this beautiful court and take darshan of the deity, that I will sponsor to make a glass cabinet which is temperature and humidity controlled. So that because, you know, Tulsi weed is after all good, it might start deteriorating very soon with age. So Indradyumna Maharaj sponsored that we'll make a temperature and humidity controlled glass cabinet so that for thousands and thousands of years this court can be preserved and everybody can take darshan. So I think in a few years that might get manifested. Maybe that's already there. Because it's there already.
The cabinet is a glass cabinet. I don't know whether it's humidity
in temperature. Nice. Maybe it is. Indradyumna Maharaj must have already done. Nice. So when Indradyumna Maharaj was then leaving the temple of Gopinath after taking darshan of Madhupandit's court, he recited a very nice prayer which we all can recite. So I'll say and he can repeat. Madhusneha
Madhusneha
Samyuktam
Samyuktam
Prema Shaktam
Prema Shaktam
Mahasayam
Mahasayam
Vrindavane
Vrindavane
Rasaratam
Rasaratam
Vande
Vande
Shri Madhupanditam
Shri Madhupanditam.
So this was a beautiful prayer which Indradyumna Maharaj recited. The meaning is, I offer my respectful obeisances to Madhupandit, the highly magnanimous soul, who is bound by strong love and attachment to the divine couple. The affection he has for these deities, the Gopinath deity, is as sweet as honey, and therefore he is known as Madhu. Madhu means honey. And he is always absorbed in the highest exchange of mellows of the Ras Leela and Vrindavan. So this is the prayer that Indradyumna Maharaj sang when he was leaving this temple. So that was a little bit glorification of Madhupandit. And now we'll move on to Janva Mata. So Madhupandit's disappearance day today, but it's Janva Mata and Sita Mata's appearance day today. So Janva Mata is actually the eternal consort of Lord Nityananda. And she has been greatly worshipped in awe and reverence and with lots of respect by Gaudiya Vaishnavas from all over India. Like even from Navadvip, from Vrindavan, Jaipur, Jagannath Puri, Gaudiya Vaishnavas all over these places had lots of awe and reverence for Janva Mata. So the Gaur Vanodesh Deepika by Kavi Karnapurna describes that she is, Janva Mata is an incarnation of Anangamanjari. Anangamanjari is the younger sister of Radharani and Sridhama. And Anangamanjari is also the expansion of Lord Balaram. So we have heard many times in the Bhagavatam also it's mentioned, and Prabhupada says that Lord Balaram is the greatest servitor of, you know, he's a servitor of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So his mood is always to serve Krishna. And he wants to serve Lord Krishna in every different rasa. So he wants to serve Krishna in Sakya Ras, he wants to serve Krishna in Vatsalya Ras, Madhurya Ras, every rasa Lord Balaram likes to serve Lord Krishna. So in order to serve him in Madhurya Ras or Shringar Ras, Lord Balaram expanded himself as the younger sister of Radharani, and that is Anangamanjari. So that's how Lord Balaram participates in pastimes of Lord Krishna as Anangamanjari in Madhurya Ras. And then it is described that Ananga Manjari expanded herself into two personalities. She expanded herself into Janava and Vasudha. And these are two sisters. They were both born in the same family. So they are two sisters who were expansions of Ananga Manjari. And there is also another, you know how sometimes different personalities come together to perform pastimes, especially in Gaur Leela. So it is described that Vasudha was also an expansion of Varuni Devi, who is the daughter of Varuna, who is the ambrosia, the nectar which Lord Balaram brings. So she's Varuni Devi. And Janva is an expansion of Revati Devi, who is also an internal consort of Lord Balaram. So their marriage to Lord Nityananda is very beautifully described in the Nityananda Charitamrita and different scriptures. So it is mentioned that these two sisters were the daughters of Suryadas Sarkhela. And Suryadas Sarkhela, so the term Sarkhela is actually a title. So that means he is the treasurer or the accountant of the king of Gauradesh. So he was the accountant of the king at that time. And he had these two daughters, beautiful daughters. And he was looking, obviously they had blossomed into a beautiful, they had got their youth, and the father was worried and was looking for matches for his two daughters. So sometimes he was getting these dreams, these beautiful dreams, where he would see Lord Nityananda. And he would see that he is an expansion of Lord Balaram. So he could see that he is non-different from Lord Balaram. You know, spreading his effulgence, white complexion like a spring cloud. So he could see all that. And he could see that on each side of Lord Nityananda were his two daughters, Vasudha and Janava, getting married to him. And he used to be so happy when he used to see this dream. And in the same way, on the other side, Lord Nityananda was also very eager to unite with his eternal consorts. So he actually sends a Brahmana as a messenger to Suryadas Sarkhela for asking for their hands in marriage of both the daughters. And just, you know, to enhance the rasa and the pastime, it is described as Suryadas Sarkhela actually refused the proposal when the Brahmana came and said that, you know, Lord Nityananda wants to marry your two daughters. And the reason given was what we were talking about from today's Bhagavatam verse, you know, Upadhi. He said that I don't know what caste, because Lord Nityananda had just come to Navadvip from somewhere and nobody knew, and he was like an avadhut. He would sometimes dress up as a Brahmana, sometimes he would dress up like whatever he wants. So nobody knew which caste and all he belonged to. So that's why Suryadas Sarkhela was a little worried, and this is an external reason obviously. He was a little worried that I don't know which caste he is from, so how can I give my daughters? We are Brahmins, and how can I give my daughters in marriage to this person? But after saying this and rejecting the proposal and sending that Brahmana away, he fell unconscious. Because he started repenting that, how can I refuse this proposal which had come from Lord Nityananda himself? And he remembered the dream he had about how Lord Nityananda is non-different from Lord Balaram. So he started repenting and he was crying in this repentance. And Janava Mata on the other hand had fainted. Because she was always eager to unite with her worshipable Lord, Lord Nityananda. But when she heard that her father has refused the proposal, she could not bear that. So she had fainted and she was foaming at her mouth. So they had called doctors and the doctors had said that this is an incurable epilepsy which your daughter has. So she cannot be cured. And Suryadas Sarkhela was obviously heartbroken because he was himself repenting why he refused the proposal. And now he was seeing this condition of his daughter as well. So he immediately sends a Brahmin to call Lord Nityananda over there and agrees to the marriage proposal. So when Lord Nityananda comes over there, it is described that just by the fragrance of Lord Nityananda's body, Janava Mata immediately came back to consciousness. So his fragrance was enough, or his presence was just enough to bring Janava Mata back to her consciousness. And then, you know, the Nityananda Charitamrita describes that very beautifully the marriage was conducted. At Shaligram, so that is where Suryadas Sarkhela was living with his two daughters. So the marriage was conducted very beautifully, and then Lord Nityananda takes both the consorts back. He goes and stays in Srivas Pandit's house for some time. He takes blessings from Sachi Mata first, then he goes to Advaita Acharya and Sita Thakurani and takes blessings. So the whole journey back to Khardeha is described, where he finally resided, Lord Nityananda. So it is said that after her marriage, Janava Mata was once taking some prasad for Lord Nityananda. And she had some food in her hand and she was taking it to feed Lord Nityananda. And even Vasudha was there with her at that time, serving Lord Nityananda. And her pallu, the sari which was covering her head, was about to fall off. So she manifests two more hands and she immediately puts that pallu back, and then she continues her service to Lord Nityananda. So, you know, these are some of the pastimes which are mentioned about Janma Mata and Vasudha Mata, and all these narrations are there in Nityananda Charitamrita. So, Vasudha had two children, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had promised Lord Nityananda that if you get married, I will come as your son. So, promise me that you will get married so that I can, you know, again come back and expand as your son. So, Vasudha had two children. One of the sons was Veerabhadra, and the second was a daughter whose name was Ganga. And as soon as Veerabhadra was born, Nityananda Prabhu realized, looking at the child, that he is none other than an expansion of the effulgence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept up his promise. And it is described that Vasudha Devi actually left her body in very early on. She passed away very early on. So Janma Mata's most of her youthful years went in looking after the two children, and also Janma Mata had adopted one more son called Ramachandra. So she had dedicated her youthful years in looking after the three children and bringing them up very nicely and making them devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then initially, after that, when she had brought up her children, Janma Mata then started manifesting her pastimes as she herself being a great Vaishnavi. So initially she was famous as Nityananda Prabhu's consort, obviously, and that itself is, you know, such a glorious thing. But later on, her own Vaishnava qualities were manifested in her pastimes. And she actually was accepted as the leader of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas at that time. Wherever she travelled, all the Vaishnavas used to, you know, just looking at her effulgence, people used to offer obeisances to her and were ready to surrender themselves to her. And she became the leader of Vaishnavas not only in Navadvip or Bengal, but also in Vrindavan, Jaipur, Puri. Wherever she used to travel, people were surrendering to her lotus feet. So it is mentioned that her devotion to Lord Gopinath was so deep and intense, and she was setting such a good example for other Vaishnavas that they couldn't help themselves but surrender to her lotus feet. So not, and it is also mentioned, like, there is a unique pastime about Janma Mata. So we see usually a deity of a person is made after they have left or they have wound up their pastimes on this earth. But in case of Janma Mata, her deity was made even when she was present on this earth. So when she used to visit the Jaipur temple regularly to worship Lord Gopinath. So the king of Jaipur and the Vaishnava council, all the leaders of Vaishnavas in Jaipur, came together, and the king had proposed, looking at Janma Mata's exalted qualities as a Vaishnavi, the king had proposed that we should make a deity of Janma Mata, and everyone had unanimously agreed. So they had carved a beautiful deity of Janma Mata, and they had put it on the altar next to Lord Gopinath, and she is Ananga Manjari as well. So she was put next to Lord Gopinath in that temple to be worshipped. So this is a unique thing about Janma Mata, that there was a deity carved even though she was present on this earth. And she has initiated great personalities when she was there. So the personalities whom we read about in Chaitanya Charitamrita, she has initiated many of these personalities. And especially she gave lots of affection to the second generation of devotees, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamanand Pandit. She gave lots of mercy and blessings. And by her blessings also they were able to preach and spread the literature of the six Goswamis everywhere. So whenever she would walk, her effulgence is so bright, as she mentioned, that people just wanted to surrender to her. They would cry in ecstasy, and it is described that even atheists and non-devotees would completely surrender themselves to her. And they would completely become devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna. So during one of her travels, she was walking along, and all these, you know, devotees, non-devotees, everyone was paying obeisances to her. Devotees were crying in ecstasy when she was walking by. But there were also some devotees or some followers of Goddess Chandi who were watching this. And they actually became quite perturbed. So they were thinking that she is just an ordinary Brahmin's wife. And why is everyone going and surrendering to her? She is just a lady. They should all be surrendering to Goddess Chandi. Why are they wasting their, you know, these are all fools. They don't realize whom should they should surrender to, and they are wasting their energy in, you know, worshipping this lady who is just an ordinary Brahmani. So like this, these disciples, these devotees of Goddess Chandi were making aparads. They were, you know, blaspheming not only the devotees who are surrendering to Janma Mata, but they were also blaspheming Janma Mata herself. And saying this, they went and actually worshipped. They went to the temple of Goddess Chandi and they offered prayers to Goddess Chandi. And they said that all these fools They do not realize that they should actually be surrendering to your lotus feet, Goddess Chandi. So why don't you give them some intelligence by which they realize what is your real position and they don't waste their energy and time in worshipping that lady. And you know what, Goddess Chandi, to teach them a lesson, you should kill all of them. So these are the prayers these devotees of Goddess Chandi offered. And then when they went to sleep at night, it is mentioned that all of them got the same dream at the same time. Goddess Chandi came in their dreams and she was holding two shining swords in both her hands. And brandishing those swords, she was threatening these devotees who had prayed. She was saying that they are not fools, you are actually fools. Because you have blasphemed my worshipable master. So Janva Mata is my worshipable master. I actually surrender myself to her and I worship her. And you are blaspheming people who are worshipping her and you are blaspheming that exalted Vaishnavi herself. If you all don't immediately go and surrender to her, I am going to kill you off by cutting your heads. So you know, a very ferocious form Goddess Chandi had taken in the dream, and she came in the dream of all these worshippers at the same time. So all of them woke up and they rushed towards Janva Mata. And it is described that they they were scared. So they all surrendered themselves at Janva Mata's feet. And they said, actually they revealed what they had done and how they had committed a big apparat to Janva Mata and all the devotees. And how Goddess Chandi had actually reprimanded them and taught them or shown them the real position of Janva Mata. And because Janva Mata was so merciful, she accepted all of them as her disciples and they became great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of Radha and Krishna. So this whole pastime is there. So another unique contribution of Janva Mata is that she created lots of solidarity and unity among different Vaishnava sampradayas. So sometimes we see that people from, you know, they are all worshipping the same Supreme Lord Krishna and Radharani, but people from different sampradayas, they dwell more on their differences than on their commonalities. And because of this, there are some friction which can happen between these different Vaishnava sampradayas. But Janva Mata's contribution was that while she would travel, because she would regularly travel between Navadvip and Vrindavan, she had created such nice relationships with all Vaishnavas, whether it was Vaishnavas in Vrindavan or Vaishnavas in Navadvip. So not only Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but even different sampradaya Vaishnavas. She had created such nice relationships and she had made them dwell on the commonalities of the Vaishnava sampradayas, that everyone had nice relationships. So this is one more contribution of Janva Mata. If we see that today all the Vaishnava sampradayas are worshipping, like, you know, they are united and they are all worshipping the Supreme Lord nicely together, that credit also goes to Janva Mata for uniting these different Vaishnava sampradayas. And there is a beautiful prayer which Bhakti Vinod Thakur has offered in his book called Kalyana Kalpataru. And it is a very nice prayer for all of us to dwell on also on, you know, Janva Mata's appearance day today. So he is praying, O Janava Devi, by the power of your divine qualities, be merciful to the servant of yours. Dispel this illusion which torments me, relieve me of this material existence, and let me take shelter of your beautiful lotus feet. You are Nityananda Shakti, the power of Lord Nityananda. You are the Guru of Krishna Bhakti. So please grant me shade of your feet, which are like the desire trees and can fulfill the desires of all Vaishnavas. You have delivered countless of sinners, so deliver me in the same way. Today, this lowly sinner surrenders at your lotus feet. So this is an exalted prayer which Bhakti Vinod Thakur has offered to Janva Mata. And in the same journey when she delivered the disciples or the devotees of Goddess Chandi, in the same journey when she continued on to Vrindavan, there were some dacoits who were there. And they saw that these Vaishnavas from Bengal have come. And you know, they are there are youth Sankirtan parties which are travelling through the streets. And they must be carrying lots of wealth, obviously, because they are on this long journey. There must be lots of wealth they must be carrying. So all the dacoits, and the leader of the dacoits says to his followers that what we will do is, we will join the Sankirtan party, pretending to be one amongst them, and we will dance and we will stay with them and, you know, show them that we are also interested in joining their party. And then at night when they are all sleeping, we will go and loot them, loot all their wealth away. So deciding this, these, you know, the dacoits join the Sankirtan party, they sing and dance Krishna's holy names. And then at night, the Vaishnavas were sleeping in one camp and they were sleeping in another camp. And maybe there was just some little street which was separating the two camps. So then the leader of the dacoits wakes the other dacoits up. And he says that these Vaishnavas are fast asleep. So let us now go in. It's a good opportune moment to go and loot all these Vaishnavas and take all their wealth away. So deciding this, they started walking towards the Vaishnava camp. And like I had said, there was just a little street, so it was not even 2-3 minutes walk. But it is described that they started walking, but they could never reach the Vaishnava camp. And by the time it was early morning, and they were still on the way to the Vaishnava camp, they had still not reached. And then the leader of the dacoits realized, he got a realization, that at night we know that we were not much apart from each other, but you know, we have not been able to reach them at all, because our intention was to loot them of all their wealth. And this is because their leader, Janva Mata, is not an ordinary person. They are all great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna. And it was actually a great aparadh that we were committing by thinking of looting these people. So let us go and surrender to their leader, Janva Mata, and surrender our rights to them. And this is what they do. So they go and surrender themselves to Janva Mata. And then they become disciples again of Janva Mata and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Janva Mata, when she was traveling once, she had a dream. And in that dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives personal instructions to Janva Mata. And he says that you should go to Kheturi, because Narottam Das Thakur is trying to spread the mission and the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But you should go, because he is hankering for your association and he is hankering for your darshan. He is crying in separation. He wants you to come and bless the Sankirtan festival that he is trying to inaugurate. So thinking like this, Janva Mata travels to Kheturi Gram. And it is said, and she had to take separation from the Khardaha Vasis, where she was originally from. So she bids farewell to her two sons, Ramachandra and Veerabhadra, and to Ganga, to her daughter Ganga, and she goes to Kheturi. And when she reaches Kheturi, she actually glances at Narottam Das Thakur for a long time, it is described. And the glance was full of mercy and full of love and compassion. And just by that glance, it is said that Narottam Das Thakur gets invested with the potency of Janva Mata and with love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. And then she personally participates in that festival. And Janva Mata was a very good cook. She would love to feed the Vaishnavas. So at this festival also, she cooks a huge feast, and with her own hands, she feeds all the Vaishnavas. And looking at, you know, the purity and the joyful interactions between the Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself appeared over there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dances in this Sankirtan festival which Narottam Das Thakur organized, and he accepts prasad from all the Vaishnavas and the feast with Janva Mata had cooked. So obviously she is a personality of transcendence. She is invested with, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, she is invested with Nityanand Shakti. So that is why she could bring about so many changes. And she goes to Vrindavan once again after this festival, and she meets the Goswamis who were still there. So she meets Gopalananda Goswami was there, Bhugarbha Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Lokanath Goswami. So she meets all of these Goswamis, and in particular she gives special mercy to Srinivas Acharya. Like we said, they were the next generation of devotees. So she blesses them with lots of mercy so they can continue the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And all these Goswamis actually go to meet her at Akrura Ghat. And they say that we have brought you here at Akrura Ghat because this was a place where even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed. Because Akrura Ghat is a little away from Vrindavan. So they say that because it is secluded, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could do his bhajan over here without getting disturbed by anybody else. And when Janva Mata hears that, she actually faints, you know, thinking of it because of the ecstasy of realizing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had also stayed in the same place. And uniquely it is described that even Madhu Pandit, along with the other Goswamis, meets Janva Mata. So like, you know, today is Madhu Pandit's disappearance day and Janva Mata's appearance day. So she meets him as well, and she gives blessings to all these Vaishnavas. So after this, she visits the seven temples of Vrindavan. And she also goes, so the Goswamis who meet her say that even Raghunath Das Goswami is very eager to meet you. But we know Raghunath Das Goswami is renunciation personified. So he used to do lots of austerities, fasting and all that, because of which his body had become completely emaciated. So the Goswamis tell her that he is not able to travel to meet you, so can you please go and give your darshan to him. So Raghunath Das Goswami was living at Radhakund at that time. So Janva Mata personally travels to Radhakund and she gives darshan to Raghunath Das Goswami, and it is said that as soon as they meet each other, both of them shed so much tears of ecstasy that their vision becomes completely clouded. They are not even able to see each other. They were so feeling so ecstatic that Raghunath Das Goswami was feeling ecstatic that Janma Mata has come, and Janma Mata was feeling ecstatic that I have, you know, I'm getting association of such a wonderful Vaishnava. And then it is described that they pay obeisances repeatedly to each other. And Janma Mata then agrees to stay at Radha Kund and give association to Raghunath Das Goswami for a few days. She stays there, and we know when we visit Radha Kund, there is also the Janma Baithak. Janma Mata Baithak is there over there, where devotees go and pray for Janma Mata's mercy. And then she completes the Govardhan Parikrama after that. So these are some of the pastimes which are described about Janma Mata. It is also Sita Mata's appearance day, but I think we've run out of time. So I'll just speak a few words about Sita Mata. That she was actually a very great devotee even in her previous life. And she was actually performing lots of austerities in her previous life to get Lord Vishnu as her husband. But when Ravana had a war with Kubera, he had defeated Kubera, he had obtained that Pushpa Viman. And from the Pushpa Viman, when he was traveling, he sees this beautiful lady performing these austerities and he tries to enjoy with her. And because her austerities were broken by this, by Ravana, she actually curses him. And she says that I will be the cause of your destruction. I will take one more birth, but because you have created an obstruction in my life of, you know, doing these austerities to obtain the Supreme Lord Vishnu, those austerities she was doing to get Lord Vishnu as her husband. But because you've done this, I will destroy you in my next birth. And then she takes her next birth as the daughter of Janak Maharaj. So when Janak Maharaj, there is a place called Sita Mari in Bihar, in present day Bihar. And when Janak Maharaj was digging the ground because he wanted to do sacrifices for the betterment of mankind, in the furrow that he has created for the sacrifice, his plow strikes against a golden casket. And in that golden casket, Sita Mata was there. So because she was found in a furrow, which is also known as Sita, that is why her name is Sita. And then Janak Maharaj moves from there, from Sita Mari, to they move to Mithila. So that is why one of her names is also Maitheli or Mithileshwari, because she was the princess of Mithila. Another name was also Janaki, because she was the daughter of Janak Maharaj. And also one more name she has is Vaidehi. So this was because Janak Maharaj was known as Videha. So Videha means somebody who has transcended this body. Deha means body, and Videha means somebody who has transcended this body. So that is why she was also known as Vaidehi. And just describing one of her childhood pastimes. So once Parshuram comes to meet Janak Maharaj, and Parshuram had a bow of Lord Vishnu, which he keeps outside the door. So this was the active bow of Lord Vishnu, and which he had given to Parshuram. And there was also an inactive bow of Lord Shiva. So when Shiva and Lord Vishnu had a fight, it seems Lord Vishnu had inactivated that bow. And that bow had been gifted to Janak Maharaj, which was already there in Janak Maharaj's kingdom. But this particular bow which Parshuram leaves outside the door when he goes to meet Janak Maharaj was the active bow of Lord Vishnu. So after visiting Janak Maharaj, Parshuram is on his way out. And he sees that the bow has suddenly gone missing. And he knows that the bow is quite heavy, you know, hundreds of soldiers are required to carry this bow. So where has it disappeared? So then when they go looking for it, they see little Sita. So Sita Mata was hardly a few years old at that time. But they see that she is playfully tossing the bow here and there. She is picking the bow with her right hand, putting it down, then picking it up with her left hand, putting it out. She was playing with this bow. And when Parshuram sees this, he becomes quite shocked and amazed. And he tells Janak Maharaj that your daughter is very powerful. So when you get her married, you should get her married to someone who is more powerful than her. And then we know the whole Sita Swayamvar happens, and even Ravana tries to come and lift that bow, the inactive bow which was there with Janak Maharaj, but he couldn't lift, and obviously Lord Ram wins over Mother Sita. And you know, a few pastimes are described where Sita Mata was quite merciful. So when Hanuman comes to rescue her from Ashok Vatika, so again, Sita Mata was a virtue of chastity. When we, you know, talk about chaste women, Sita Mata's name is right at the top. She was virtue of chastity, and Prabhupada describes that modern day, you know, the feminists, like, you know, in modern day world, people, especially the feminists, will say that you should not be subservient to your husband. You're equal rights, equality, women's equality, they are equal to men. You know, all these things are there. So it's exactly opposite to what our scriptures describe as a woman's quality, what a woman's quality should be. And Prabhupada said that chastity is not subservience at all. In fact, chastity gives you the protection of the Lord. So because Sita Mata was so chaste to Lord Ram not only destroyed Ravana, but he destroyed the whole the whole dynasty of demons just to rescue his wife. So this is what Prabhupada says, that if a woman is chaste, she actually purchases the protection of her husband. The husband feels so protective and, you know, agrees to protect her throughout her life and look after her. So this is an example that Sita Mata says. And even speaking of chaste women, there is Anusuya, whose name is also counted among chaste women. And when they were in Chitrakoot, during the exile, Sita Mata actually goes to take blessings of Anusuya Devi. And at that time, Anusuya Devi, looking at Sita Mata's qualities, she becomes so pleased with her that she gives her ornaments, and she says that when you put these ornaments on, they will keep you fresh throughout your life. Like, they will always keep you looking ever fresh and youthful and beautiful. And she also gives her Angavastram to her. So Anusuya Devi had an Angavastram which she gives to Sita Devi. And she says that whenever you have this Angavastram on you, you will never suffer from the pangs of hunger. So it was not only her chastity. When she was in Ravana's capture for a year, it is described in Ramayana that she never ate even one morsel of food throughout the year. And everyone was wondering, because demons usually are so much into sense gratification and eating opulent food. So they were wondering how this lady is able to survive. She has not eaten one morsel for the whole year. And it was obviously Sita Mata's chastity. She is none other than the eternal consort of Lord Ram. But also this Anusuya Devi's Angavastram, which actually helped her not suffer from the pangs of hunger. So, describing her compassion, when Hanuman comes to actually talk to her, he has found Sita Mata in Ashok Vatika. He comes to talk to her and he sees that she is surrounded by all these demonesses who had been stationed over there by Ravana. And they have been instructed by Ravana that you